This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? And you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 111. Today is Thursday, August 3rd. Catching our breath a little bit from the trade deadline. A lot of fun stuff, but definitely all over the socials and podcast world. So we've got a fun little zig to the zag today, Steve. Very much looking forward to second edition of our Is It Legit segment. We did hitters last week. We are focusing the entire show today on pitchers. And we've got about a dozen names of pitchers pretty new to the scene this year, or at least new to being highly productive, reliable fantasy players. And it's time for us to kind of evaluate, do a deep dive, assess if we think it's legit, as the show title says, and also a little bit of forecasting into the offseason where we see these guys going. Of course, you know, most trade deadlines are approaching or almost at the end, but still, there might be some actionable ones in here, more so than hitting. I think there's a few that might be available in shallow leagues, but going to be a great show. Very excited. Steve, how's it going, man? Are you feeling the turbulence from all of this trade deadline stuff?
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting deadline. I know there's been a few in the past where it's kind of been ho-hum and returns for rentals aren't what they were back in the day just because teams have smartened up. But this was a pretty good one, in large part due to the Mets and Steve Cohen just willing to eat all of the salary to get high-end prospects. But hey, you got to do what you got to do. But yeah, it was a pretty exciting deadline. I know you texted me if we wanted to make this a trade deadline focus show, but you know, by Thursday this will be, or a Thursday, 2 days from the deadline, like you kind of you forget already, and like you get used to the pitchers and the players on the new teams. It's funny how quickly that happens. Like once the guys make a start, it becomes old news quick. So I'm glad we're focusing on this. I know we teased it last week, and I think last week was a great topic with the breakout hitters and evaluating them. And now we do the pitcher version. So I think it's a fun show, and glad we pivoted. There'll be plenty of other trade deadline shows that you probably already listened to as we're 2 days out now from the trade.
Absolutely.
Deadline,
so. And a handful of these guys are either impacted, whether directly or indirectly, by some of the trade deadline moves. And Steve, I'm more than happy to veer off course if we want to do some, you know, some quick cameos for some of the guys. There's a couple names of guys who got moved who didn't make this list but are having nice little seasons. So maybe we'll stray into that. But going to be a great show. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in, especially in the month of August. You know, it's down to the wire. So, you know, good luck to all the teams kind of scrapping and clawing out there. Steve, I'll save it because no one wants to hear it on our home leagues and our industry leagues, but we'll do a little recap show before long, and we've got enough names that we should probably just jump right in. So the first one, and one of the best ones on the whole list, really, in terms of production this season, is Mr. Jesus Luzardo. Chalk it up as another one. I don't know about you, but probably about 2 years early for me on Lizardo, and didn't have many shares this year, even though he was kind of a popular breakout pick. And man, has he lived up to that hype in the preseason. Lizardo 8-5 on the season with 147 strikeouts over 125 innings, a 3.38 ERA, and a 1.18 WHIP. Very solid across the board for Lizardo, and it's looked even better in the past month with 35 strikeouts over 28 innings, a 2.89 ERA. The WHIP has climbed up a little bit at 1.29, but yes, the highlight was last week. As we record this, the 13 strikeouts versus the Rockies was a career high for Lizardo. And yeah, I saw a tweet where, you know, it's kind of lopsided on AL pitchers, but NL Cy Young, I was laughing at our local sports radio about a month ago saying Marcus Stroman was a front runner for NL Cy Young. And I'm like, yeah, take a picture, it'll last longer. But Lizardo is in the discussion now. And it begs the question, Steve, are we fully buying this? And if so, where does he land in the landscape of pitching?
I am fully buying this. If he is not being drafted as like an SP1 next year, I will gladly take him at any discount from that. We probably should have been more in on him this year. I don't know how I wasn't.
Pollock was big on him.
Yeah, 30% strikeout rate in 100 innings. Like, what else do you need to see? Like, yeah, the walk rate was a little elevated, but it wasn't even that bad, and he improved this year. I'm surprised that maybe it was because I was in on him for the last 2-3 years. It seemed like it always seemed like there was something, but it just takes a little bit. And it's finally happening for Lizardo. Like, there's nothing that I could see that doesn't scream SP1 going forward. Like, this looks like Shane McClanahan, like 90% of Shane McClanahan, like 97 from the left side. Like, he improved his velocity this year. Sure, maybe he doesn't have as elite secondaries, but he still does have a really good slider and a changeup that he throws a lot. He's throwing the fastball a lot more this year, and when, you know, if you're pumping 97 from the left side, like, that's okay. I know usually it's a move away from the fastball that leads to the breakout, but it's a really good pitch, so doesn't really, you know, matter to me that's what he's doing it with. You know, it went up almost a half a tick. Like, that's ridiculous for that. Mm-hmm. He was already sitting 96 last year, right? Gets really good whiffs on it for a fastball. If you have that, like, there's so much less to worry about. Like, if you have a really good fastball, because you can lean on it and throw it more like Lizardo is doing. So, I hope that he is somehow, you know, maybe just because of the track record and there is a blow up start here or there that happens, and, you know, the WHIP isn't elite, but it's not due to the walks, right? He's only walking 6.8% of the batters he's facing. It's the best walk rate since a 12 inning sample in 2019 with Oakland for him. So I'm not too concerned about that. Like, he's not giving up too many home runs, so I'm all in on Lizardo for the rest of the year. And for next year, he is going to be a guy that I target as my first pitcher next year, for sure.
Yeah, it is interesting on the WHIP with the relatively low walk rate. And honestly, looking at the four-seamer for how much he uses it, you know, it doesn't get a lot of whiffs, Steve. And, like, the high lock on pitcher list where you want the high location
relative,
of the fastball.
Relative for fastballs, though, is it does it get a decent amount of whiffs? Like,
so let's see, swing strike rate is 49th percentile, okay. The CSW,
so about
47th
average.
Percentile, yeah. So I guess, like, looking at how much he relies on the fastball, it is a little perplexing that he doesn't locate it high that well, and also, like, the CSW and the swing strike rate are kind of middle of the pack. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, there, obviously there's something that he's doing that's yielding the success, and the velocity is great. But he doesn't get a lot of extension on it. It's just a little interesting. I mean, I would still love to see, for how much swing and miss he gets on his slider, it would obviously be great to see him increase that from just like 29%. But yeah, I mean, the fastball, he's increased. I guess it's all come in exchange for the sinker, and the sinker in the past, looking at it, I mean, it got decent results. Yeah, this one is going to be a little bit more of an off-season deep dive. I'll tell you, the reason I missed on him this year was at that point in the draft, I was kind of loading up on Joe Ryan and Jeffrey Springs. So it was
same
kind of an area where you couldn't go wrong. I mean, obviously Springs with the injury, but if anything, it just goes to underline that approach of, you know, you can wait on the top starting pitchers and then just hammer the mighty middle there. So yeah, I do like Lizardo. Nick Pollock's got him at 14th on the list this week, right around names like Pablo Lopez that we really like. Lopez is right behind him. Zach Wheeler is right in front of him. Joe Ryan, who we just mentioned, is four spots behind him. So yeah, really good area. And I'm hoping, if that is my SP1, SP2, especially SP1, that you could wait a little bit. Because, yeah, people might be slow to kind of indoctrinate him into the ace tier. But, like, the secondary stuff, the swing and miss is there. And the pitch, I mean, the fastball's got elite velocity. So hard to argue there. It's just a little interesting that I'm kind of curious what about that fastball is working so well for him.
PLV likes it better than you know, the swing strike stuff, plate discipline results. So maybe that's, you know, a little bit of it. I'm going to look up the stuff for it real quick, just to see how it is. I'm sure it grades out well, because it's just the an overall, you know, a 97 mile an hour fastball from the left side.
It's one of those where, like, the run value is super high, but it's because he uses it so much and it's gone so well. And my, you know, it's our job to kind of assess if we think is the fastball gonna have a little
102 stuff plus, so around Aaron Nola, Marcus Stroman. That's strange for me, right? Like, that's that was overall stuff plus. I'm filtering it now on just the fastball, 103. So yeah, I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised that it's not as good considering. But hey, Joe Ryan's like 102, and that's another guy that gets more deception. He's more of, you know, the low release point with good extension and not amazing velocity. But Lizardo's got the velocity, and it's working with the secondary. So I'm not too concerned about it, just because.
I know he's come up with a huge prospect pedigree, and to see him put it all together this season has been awesome. It's kind of, you know, not unlike what we've been saying about Pablo Lopez. So I am interested, but I am going to say, in the off season, I'm taking a closer look, because there's a little bit of just kind of head scratchers with the profile.
You wouldn't be as comfortable as me with him as your first pitcher off the board.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so. Okay. When I look at, Pablo Lopez right behind him is a guy that I like. I know we've talked about him a lot, but. Enough of Lizardo. We got the whole offseason to talk about him. Let's move to a guy who probably is an NL Cy Young candidate, but if he had the volume, he'd be worth the discussion. It's Andrew Abbott, who might be really producing at the highest level out of all the youngsters this season. I know Yuri Perez was great, but now that he's kind of getting a prolonged absence, Abbott is one that's just really stood out. 6-2 record, 71 strikeouts over 65 innings, which honestly is a little bit lower on a K rate than we expected, at least from the video game numbers he had in the minors. But the ratios at just a 2.35 ERA, a 1.03 WHIP for Abbott, and some pretty mesmerizing GIFs out there on the Twitter, or should I say the X, with his ability to tunnel the fastball and the curve. Andrew Abbott, man, I have him in a dynasty league, and I had been holding for a while, but it's the only share, Steve, and I kind of missed the boat in my home league. I missed the boat on TGFBI. And for how much we were all excited about him, he's really been producing. Question is, under the hood, long term, do we buy it? Because he's a pretty unique pitcher, not dissimilar to Joe Ryan with kind of the submarine or just the wonky delivery and the deception that he relies on for the fastball. But what do you think about Andrew Abbott, 24 years old for the Reds? It looks like he is definitely a part of this project rebuild that's coming to fruition here.
I like it. I was a little bit hesitant because a lot of those ridiculous numbers came with that tacky ball in Double A, but it looks like as he is sort of figured it out, he's only gotten better. That being said, there are a lot of luck indications going on here. It's a 92% left on base percentage, a 235 BABIP, and just a 9.9% homer to fly ball with only a 24% ground ball rate. That's ridiculously low. Like, I know he's striking out a lot of batters, but you know, there's still a good amount of fly balls in there that are not turning into home runs. And in that, yeah, exactly, that in that ballpark, you definitely could expect some regression. That being said, I think the regression still leads to a really good pitcher. You know, this XFIP and Sierra are a little bit higher at a 4.12 ERA and 4.37, but I'm probably buying closer to his X ERA at 3.36 and FIP at 3.90, maybe somewhere in between there. So I like Abbott and think that he potentially could be a decent buy because, you know, people may do the same analysis that we do and see how lucky he's gotten, quote unquote lucky, and be a little bit out on him. But if he continues to run that he's on, like, you know, maybe that's not going to matter. But that being said, I like Abbott for this year and for next year. It's just, you know, that curveball that he has is just absolutely. I think maybe it's a sweeper that it is, but it's a really good pitch and it's a ton of whiffs. So I like Abbott a lot going forward. Like I know it's not the greatest tool, but like the similar pitchers on Statcast, it's like. Yeah. 2023 Max Scherzer, 2023 Joe Ryan, 2023 Yuri Perez. Like, that's a good comp for guys to be in there. So, it's tough too with the ballpark. Maybe I would go with other pitchers around him that I like, just because having Great American Ballpark as your home is not the greatest. But I think it's a good investment long term.
Yeah, I could see him being a polarizing one because of the underlying stuff. The swinging strike rate, mm-hmm. despite all that success in the minors, is pretty middling. And then you add in the ballpark, the fly ball rate, like you're talking about. He's another guy who, for how much he throws the fastball, does not really locate it by the book how you want to. But again, it has that Joe Ryan deception. So I know Nick Pollock is a fan, and the... On the list, he's got Abbott at 29, which is crazy to see him ahead of names, kind of household names like Logan Gilbert, who we've gotten used to up there. Yeah, ahead of Carlos Rodon, Bailey Ober. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun offseason breaking all these down, but it's crazy to think Andrew Abbott is kind of grading out as like an SP3 right now, which makes you think he'll probably be in that you know, 120, give or take, for overall ADP next year. And, yeah, I it'll be interesting to see if he takes his lumps, too, because I know, not to just cite Nick 100 times on here, but that's one thing he talks about with young player analysis is, you know, even when they start hot, you like to see them face a little adversity and come out on the other side of that. I know he talked about that with a guy like Hunter Green, for example, or Ranger Suarez. So, you know, with Abbott having just a 2.35 ERA, it's been, you know, pretty smooth sailing, especially given the ballpark. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens in the final 2 months here. But Abbott, I think it's a good note that he will probably be pretty divisive in draft rooms with a big gap between his min pick, max pick. So stay tuned on Abbott. Moving over to the Orioles, Kyle Bradish has had an impressive year with the 6-6 record, but ratios have been excellent. A 3.29 ERA, a 1.14 WHIP. You'll definitely sign up for that with Bradish. The K rate is not really his game in a way, just 95 strikeouts and 104 innings. And yeah, the past month it's looked terrific with a sub 1 WHIP, a 2.42 ERA. And yeah, I had to call out, Steve, that Eno Saris, we'll talk about this tweet a couple times on the show, but had a tweet with the top 10 curveball stuff plus pitchers with 30 innings pitched or more. Kyle Bradish's curve was number 7 on the list. So he definitely has some, I guess, some potential for even more swing and miss with that curveball. Now they've got Flaherty joining the mix out there in Baltimore. But Bradish, what are your thoughts on the mini breakout we're seeing this year for the 26-year-old?
I love Kyle Bradish. I wish I had more. I had him rostered and dropped him early in the season. I was, you know, all aboard the fact that his slider was one of the best in baseball, and he just needed a few tweaks to break out, and he's kind of done that. And I think there's more to come. Like, that slider, it's is one of the best pitches in baseball. By PLV, it's the 99th percentile for PLV for sliders.
Wow.
It's, you know, gets great whiffs at 34.7% whiff percentage on Savant. Like, I know this isn't great to look at on an individual pitch level, but it's got a 174 batting average against and a 194 expected batting average against. Guys are slugging just 265 off of it. And then to add to it, the fact that the curveball also is really good. Yeah, the fastball isn't great, and that kind of is what's holding it back more. But, you know, he's throwing it less this year. If he can get more out of the curveball and get more comfortable with that, add that to an elite slider, I think that the swing strike rate and then therefore the K rate could end up creeping up. He gets really good ground balls. It's now a good ballpark to pitch in, especially for, I guess not necessarily for righties, because lefties still have, you know, the shorter porch in right field there. But it's still a better pitcher's park than it was before. And, you know, to get past Baltimore in left field is nearly impossible. For opposite hand batters, I think only one person, I think someone did it like last week. It was the first time that a left handed hitter went opposite field over that wall there. So crazy how much of a pitcher park Camden Yards has become. And I'm more in on Bradish because of it. I think I would go Bradish over Abbott for next year. I may be in the minority for that.
But, yeah.
The slider is just so good, man.
Yeah, I mean, I was wanting for you to, like, sell me, because it turned, yes, the whiffs are there on the slider, but, like, most pitchers get whiffs on the slider. So, like, but, it, you know, it's definitely above average. Like, on his pitcherless page, the swing strike rate on the slider is 71st percentile. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, a solid, definitely a plus pitch for him. The four-seamer is nothing of note, like you mentioned, with just like an 18th percentile swinging strike rate. He does locate it high pretty well. I guess is it mainly the secondaries with the curve and the slider, and it's this is kind of faith, almost Jordan Montgomery-esque, where you're counting on him to take the next step because his command is pretty good. He doesn't walk, at least this year, he's not walking a lot of batters. I do like the ground ball rate up at north of 50%. So that is a plus, but it's hard for me to get too jacked about a guy who's, you know, well under a strikeout per inning. But maybe I'm just overlooking kind of the potential with the secondaries here.
I think so, and maybe if there could be the development of the curve or just a tweak with the fastball. The O swing on the slider, I think, is what's causing it to not have the elite K and strikeout numbers. It's just a 31.9% O swing. That's 39th percentile. And league average is 33% on a slider. And you would think a slider that good would get a lot of swings out of the zone. So yeah. Maybe because he is throwing it so much, the hitters know it's coming. And it's hard to get hitters to chase it in two strike counts. So that seems like something that could be a minor tweak that could lead to a strikeout breakout. Is the picture that I'm painting for myself for next year.
Okay.
Bradish.
Well, I mean, it's a good one of the bunch we've talked about because you're going to get such a discount on Bradish. Like, he will not go in the same area, I would imagine, as Abbott, obviously not Lizardo, but yeah. This one I could see as being a good kind of beginning of the all bets are off range of the drafts where you're just kind of, you know, throwing darts at pitchers that you think could take the next step. So good notes for sure on Bradish. Jumping over to Tyler Wells, his teammate, who is now kind of odd man out after he got optioned maybe a little prematurely. He had such a great start to the year, and then coming out of All-Star break, three starts, he just had 9 innings pitched and an 11 ERA, a 2.11 whip, could not keep runners off the base paths with the walks. And now they signed Jack Flaherty, Grayson Rodriguez up, and unless he can kind of displace Dean Kramer, it's looking like Wells is kind of going to miss out. Is that right, Steve? Or do we think it's a matter of time? Because when he was out there, just a 102 whip on the season, sub-4, almost a strikeout per inning. Like, people were really excited about Wells, and then they kind of had the short hook on him struggling out of All-Star break, I guess, with just the push for the playoff picture and everything.
Yeah, it's a little surprising and I guess concerning that it was that quick that he needed to, it was that short of a poor performance that led to a demotion and a boot from the rotation. So I still like Wells. Like, I liked Wells before this year and didn't really have as many shares as I should have just because the stuff was better and the swing strike rates were better than what, you know, the ERAs and surface stats were. And, you know, just by looking at the old back of the napkin sort of original pitcher analysis, like a 102 whip is still really, really good. And is better than what his current ERA is, even though it's not horrible, right? Like a 380 ERA is pretty good, especially with the offensive environment up slightly this year. So, this may be more of like a super late round flyer next year, even mm-hmm. more so than Bradish. But I still think there is a lot to like. A five pitch mix that he throws, he throws five pitches at least 8% of the time. There's a lot to tinker with there. And just one of those pitches can take a step. And he locates well, just looking at all the strike zone plots, like the slider's down in the way, the fastball's up, the changeup's down and in, like, you know,
he's 6'8" too. Yeah, like that fastball has to just like
definitely
jump on you.
Yeah.
So that, even with the lower velo, I feel like the spin rate on his fastball is way up there. He gets more vertical drop with that than typical players. And yeah, with the 6'8" frame, I feel like there's potential there. So hopefully they find a way to work him in. But to jump off the rundown just a little bit, Steve, I was blown away, man, when I was looking at all the, you know, trade deadline updates. That 358 baseball on Instagram, it's like sending me, you know, the notifications, all that stuff. I thought Eduardo Rodriguez went to the Dodgers, and then I like read the caption and I was like, what? He exercised like the no trade clause, like really just on taxes or something. So I did want to just veer off briefly because we talked about E-Rod so much last year. He had a tough personal year last year and we were in on him, kind of out this year. And he's one that's looked amazing with just a 2.95 ERA, a 103 whip, and over a strikeout per inning. Are you kind of liking this E-Rod bounce back and taking it seriously for next year? Because he's still just 30 years old.
I think so, and I think it's kind of good for his fantasy value that he stayed put. It's a great pitcher's park. Like, what was it? Was it 2 years ago now, or was it last offseason when he signed with Detroit and everyone was super excited about him because he's a lefty that I've had to deal with the wall there in,
yeah,
in
Fenway.
Fenway.
Yeah. Last year was his first year with Detroit, and yeah, rough.
I'm kind of glad that he stayed there. There was just, I think there was a few injuries last year. I think he left the team for like personal reasons for a bit last year.
He lost his mom or his grandma or something. Yeah. It was really breaking him up.
There was a lot going on. There's always been a lot to like with E-Rod's profile. And this kind of looks like peak E-Rod when he was in Red Sox, like a 26% strikeout rate. The walk rate's improved, right? Like, it's the best of his career. So mix that together with that ballpark in Detroit. Like, it's a formula for success. Sure, maybe not a sub-3 ERA, but still a very, very usable fantasy starter going forward. So for fantasy purposes, I'm kind of glad that he exercises his no-trade clause and is still with Detroit.
Yeah, kind of a workhorse. I think he's, innings per start, the last month hasn't looked as good, but there was a nice stretch there. It was like 8 innings, 7 innings, 8 innings, 7 innings. So like, yeah, E-Rod is kind of a bygone era, and I think he would be a nice little glue piece depending on where he lands in drafts next year. So had to just venture there. For what it's worth, he is 53rd on the list for Mr. Nick Pollock. So we will get to another group of pitchers, but we are going to take our first ad break and we'll be right back. All right, from a former Red Sox to a current one, James Paxton, Steve, is another guy who was kind of rumored to the Dodgers as well. He stayed put in Boston, and that's a little bit of a question mark with their playoff picture and just how high the stock is on Paxton and how fragile Paxton is. I was surprised that he wasn't moved, but it's got to be discussed that he's been excellent. He is, very much one of the breakout pitchers of the season. 6-2 record, 80 strikeouts over 70 innings, a 3.34 ERA, and a 1.07 WHIP. James Paxton, it's a little bit like we're waiting for the shoe to drop on just the health and the durability, but this is one we've talked about all season, Steve. And going into his age 35 season next year, is he someone you're going to be able to trust for your fantasy rotations?
All of the numbers, like the swing strike rates, the CSW, the K percentage, the walk rate, it all looks like peak and prime James Paxton, like that became a fantasy stud. But I just cannot count on the innings. I wouldn't be able to do it just solely because of that. And I may miss out. I may miss out on, 150 innings, but he's only done that twice in his career. And it was 150.2 innings in 2019, 160 innings in 2018 with Seattle. He was one of the best pitchers in the game in 2018 when he had those 100 60 innings, but still, it's just too much of a health concern for me. Everything else screams that, yes, it's legit. And I believe that James Paxton is legit whenever he's healthy, but that's a big if and rare when he's healthy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, the velocity being up at 95.5, yeah. Yeah. When, you know, the struggle years, like last year, even 2 years ago, down at 92 miles per hour and up from that. So it looks great, but I think you said it. It's like there's going to have to be a significant discount here to where, like, it's tough to say, like, in terms of the risk-reward. Again, it's probably going to be a guy that has a big variance on min pick, max pick, but it feels like he probably is just shy of that dart throw range because of the health. Like, I don't think I would go for a James Paxton before pick 130. I mean, just blind, not knowing what the board looks like. But, like, at that point, you're talking about a ninth round, eighth round pick. And it's just, that's the same range where you could get a Joe Ryan or a Jesus Luzardo or a Pablo Lopez this year. So, yeah, I think I would go with somebody on the better side of 30 who has similar upside as Paxton. But, yeah, also not to say that what he's doing right now isn't deserved. It's just
I think I'd rather have both of his teammates that probably deserve a spot on this show in Brian Bayo and Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, Pivetta finally getting extended in the rotation. And mm-hmm. What was it, like 10 strikeouts over the weekend?
Yep.
This weekend, so
I
yeah.
I think that was two starts in a row now with 10 strikeouts. I know one of them was the A's, I believe, but still looks really good.
Yeah, and to keep moving on this group, because this is kind of the, I guess you could say the crusty veterans in a way,
yeah,
but
yeah.
they're breaking back into, you know, being fresh fantasy options. Jose Berríos is the next one who we all thought we could move on from. And man, he has been excellent. The past month, a 184 ERA, a 119 whip. And Berríos, it's looking very much like vintage Berríos. Mm-hmm. 8-7 record, 130 innings. The strikeouts beneath that a little bit at 123. But on the season line, a 3.31 ERA and a 120 whip, which is solid enough with that ERA. So Berríos is another one, Steve, that we've talked about throughout the year. It's funny, a calendar year ago, we had him on our rundown for being a, like, what is happening with Jose Berríos? And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot can change in a year. So is he back in the circle of trust?
I think so. Like, this is what you said. This is vintage Jose Berríos. Like, this was a classic example of trust the back of the baseball card. You know, like a high eights K per nine, mid threes ERA, not an SP one, but like a pretty solid SP two, three, maybe closer to three, but still that's really, really serviceable. And there's even some things that, you know, you like more this year, like the fastball velo's up, the swing strike rate's back in line with like 2019 when he threw 200 innings and had, you know, a 3.68 ERA and an 8.75 strikeout per nine, a little better than where he's at now. So maybe there's a little bit more strikeout upside going forward, but you're picking at nits if that's the case. Like, this has just been a solid player that you probably got essentially for free, because I think he got blown up the first two times and was dropped in a lot of leagues and was just drafted so low regardless because of that 5.23 ERA last year. But Berríos kind of, I think, is who he is. And it's looking like that 2022 was just a bit of an outlier. And he has this reliable arm that you could just count on for solid innings, solid ratios, and solid Ks. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, the use of the changeup is really encouraging. It's got the highest put away percent of any of his pitches. And the last time it had kind of swing and miss to this scale was in 2020. And that's the only time of his career. I know it's his fourth pitch, but he does mix his repertoire up quite a bit. So he throws it 20% of the time. And yeah, the changeup, like going back to 2020 is another one of those years where it was kind of typical Berríos. I know what that was just after like All-Star Berríos, but still just 29 years old. And yeah, this one, in terms of like draft and hold guys, I think that that's one of my learnings, Steve, from the Raz Slam team that's gone well for me, is like my home league buddies were, you know, joking around telling me to share my team with them. And they're like, this looks like our like waiver wire page. Like, how is your team number one overall? But like the volume, and I know some of the best that play talk about like how a JP Crawford or some of these guys who just like, you know, provide so much volume, give you opportunities to excel. Berríos with his 130 innings next to James Paxton, who's only got 70. Like next year, these are the types of guys that it doesn't seem like it's a pick that has the sizzle or anything like that. But when you put it all together, it's the volume guys like this that can really help a lot of those teams, whether it's an unexpected injury or just a week where it all kind of clicks right for them. So, yeah, I think I'll be in on Berríos next year as another one of these glue guys. But I think you'll also get a little bit of a discount because the name value is kind of worn off and the strikeout rate doesn't like jump off the page. But he is kind of an accumulator, which is nice. So more to come on Berríos, especially if he keeps up this ratio production. Just, he could flirt with a, you know, 3 ERA with where he's at right now and where he's been the past month. So that is Jose Berríos. And the third one in this group is a guy we've talked about throughout the season and one that I have much more shares of this year. So I am loving what Zach Eflin has been doing, even though the past month it's kind of been up and down. He's had a couple scoreless outings, but he's had a couple where he's gotten roughed up a little bit. The season line for Eflin is 116 innings with pretty much a strikeout per inning, 116 Ks as well, 3.64 ERA, a 1.02 WHIP, and an 11-6 record with the Tampa Bay Rays. Zach Eflin is one that I think will be a little bit pricier, Steve. You know, the 116 from a volume standpoint isn't bad for the Rays, and I guess that's what they signed up for by getting a 29-year-old. He's not an arm they need to baby or anything like that. And while some of his swing and miss rates haven't been through the roof, it's mainly the walk rate paired with his strikeout rate that's so impressive. But what are your thoughts on Eflin kind of long term and into the off season?
Yeah, I think he might be a little underrated going forward. There has been more bumps in the road, and I know there was a knee injury that he should be okay. I think he's starting again this week. But, you know, this is like what the Rays do. They find a guy that have like elite skills and get the most out of him. And his elite skills is his walk rate, which was always good and is great this year. And his ground ball rate, which is, you know, 53.3%. That's 18th best among starters. So really good stuff. And, you know, pair that they're able to get the most out of his strikeout rate and bump it up, you know, that 5%. To get him into like the 74th percentile, the 25% K rate, you know, well above league average, where he was like average last year. Like that leads to this sort of success. You know, had he had that sub 3 ERA, then maybe, you know, I'm becoming out on the cost like he had, you know, a month or two ago. But I think pair that with, you know, the injury concerns. There's always been like seemingly like a lingering knee issue with Eflin, which isn't great. And the fact that the Rays are going to Ray, and, you know, maybe it's not the most elite strikeouts, there could be some buying opportunities. And if there is, you know, not like this year where Eflin was like probably one of the last pitchers you took in like a standard 12-team draft. But I'm still in on him if he's going to go at like SP3 or 4 prices, which I think he might.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, in terms of the names we've talked about, I would expect he goes ahead of Berríos, ahead slightly of Paxton.
You think? I don't know. Like Paxton's like 16th on the list. Eflin's 27th.
Oh, I didn't realize Paxton was that high. Yeah, man, I'm not going to have shares if he's going that high with the health concerns.
Agreed. And list is more like right this second, right? Not looking
forward. Yeah, this week, forward. That type of thing. Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, maybe a guy like, we'll talk about more names, but yeah, part of my gut tells me Eflin will be between that, like, pick 100, pick 130 type of range where you kind of have to go in like the eighth round, something like that. But it's a pretty reliable piece. And yeah, he's been able to really help with whip. I mean, that's an old Paul Sporer thing. It's like one of the most underrated stats. Like everyone goes to ERA, right? But like that 102 whip stands out very much compared to Berríos, to where I bet if, for context, Berríos has the 331 ERA, the 120 whip, Eflin has the 364 ERA, and the 102 whip. I think Eflin's actually helping your ratios more than Berríos is because of the disparity with the whip there. So, yeah, Eflin's a good one there. It was kind of a fun tweet from Eric Cross, always one of the better X follows out there. And, yeah, one of five pitchers with a 30% K minus BB. And a 50, well, that should be 20%, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah, 20% K minus BB and a 50% ground ball rate. Those pitchers are Drew Rasmussen, Framber Valdez, Zach Eflin, Tyler Glasnow, and Logan Webb. Mm-hmm. And three of those are Rays. So
good.
We might talk about another. Yeah, another Ray is kind of our tease. But all right, guys, want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST, all one word, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you got some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 and older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. So, Steve, to round out, maybe it's unfair to lump him in with the crusty vets, which is kind of a harsh name to begin with, but Bailey Ober finally is making his breakthrough this season after he's kind of been a bit of a fantasy sleeper across the industry the past couple of years. Ober on the season, 6-5, 98 and two-thirds innings, 95 strikeouts. So again, flirting with that strikeout per inning, a 3.19 ERA and a 1.04 WHIP. So he's kind of taking the best of both worlds there from Berríos's ERA and Eflin's WHIP. It's looked a little bit bumpier in the past month, but we've talked about how we love what the Twins have been doing. It's kind of an underrated staff and pitching coaching out there. Bailey Ober, I mean, talk to me about what we're thinking here, because this is the youngest of the bunch here and probably still untapped potential.
I agree. And if he does continue to take a little bit more lumps and the surface numbers don't look as good, I'm not that you hope that anyone does poorly, but I'm hoping that the cost goes down, because I really, really like Bailey Ober. Just a 4.6% walk rate, a 24.3% strikeout rate isn't great, but I think the stuff is a lot better than that strikeout rate, and I think there's some room for improvement. He doesn't have the elite velocity, which again is a little surprising for a guy who's 6'9", but giant. It's elite extension, good spin. The chase rate is good. The command is just insane, and the swing strike rate is super, super high. No pitcher list includes foul tips that leads to the discrepancy on Fangraphs, but 12.9% on Fangraphs, 14.4% on pitcher list. That's 25th best in the league. POV overall, 7th in the league at 5.28. There's some room for improvement, it looks like, with the strikeout rate. I like Ober a lot and think that this is just the beginning of the breakout in my mind for him. I think that there is some room for growth with the strikeouts there. Another guy who throws 4 pitches at least 8% of the time, if that curveball or changeup can take a step as far as whiffs go, look out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is we've talked about it for someone like Logan Gilbert, where it's like if they've got a good fastball, that's first and foremost like the foundation for an ace, and then work on the rest of the stuff. And it's interesting because, I mean, for one, yeah, like you said, Steve, his fastball is terrific for a lot of reasons there with the extension, the swing and miss on it is great. The slider last year actually had a 37% whiff rate, and this year that's down to 31.
Yeah.
So it's like between the changeup, the slider, and the curveball, all he needs is for one of those. Oh my God, then he could just be, you know, Tyler Glass now, kind of with like 2 pitches and a great fastball, but with that command as well. So, oh yeah, I think Ober is definitely one I'm circling in the offseason. And it'll be interesting to see where he goes as well, because again, I mean, I don't know about the circles you're in, but it seems like the industry is big on him, but I haven't seen that many reaches for him. And I know next year will be kind of a new territory for his ADP and everything. Also, they got Chris Paddock is coming back, but he should not be in jeopardy. I know he's kind of been in and out of the rotation, but
no,
I think he's pretty much secured at this point.
He's part of the future, I think, for them for a while.
Okay. So that is Bailey Ober, and one that we really like. We've got a few more, including another youngster, but we're going to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back. All right. So, Steve, kind of the second one, I guess, out of the long list here that was from the up-and-comers this year, the newbies, and it is Tanner Bibee, who, with all of kind of the prospect buzz that came with him, he's kind of quietly put up a really productive season. I think it's because he was kind of slow to start, and in the past month, it's really clicked in when, in the last 30 days, a 2.19 ERA and a 1.01 whip. Bibee is now 7-2 on the season with 91 strikeouts over 89 and two-thirds innings, a 3.11 ERA, and a 1.19 whip. Tanner Bibee for the Guardians. They're obviously committed to the youth here. I think from now on, this is definitely, you know, especially with the move of Savali, it's just underlining that this is kind of the future. So Tanner Bibee, age 24, one of the bigger prospects coming into the season in terms of pitchers, and it's looked really good, man. What are you thinking for long-term for Bibee?
Yeah, I dig it. Part of it is just because, you know, the Guardians have been so good at developing guys like this, and then the other part of it is that it just looks like it's a good arsenal with, you know, 3 really good pitchers in the fastball, slider, and changeup. So, you know, he has good velocity on the fastball, good swing and really good swing and miss on the changeup, and you know, the sliders okay by
room
swing
to
and
grow.
Miss,
get, yeah, room to
yeah,
grow.
Room to grow, but getting really good results as far as like, you know, contact and things like that. So, and what's most encouraging is that he's kind of had those lumps. Like he came up, was really good the first few starts, was pretty tough towards the end of June and July, and then is like really starting to put together. Like I know his last 2 starts, I think he actually won the King Cole, which, you know, if you read the lineups, it's or the daily pitching roundups, it's the leader in CSW and on a given night. And he did that against the White Sox and Philadelphia in the last 2 times out. So has started to turn a corner. And, you know, like Nick says, it's good to see how a pitcher adjusts back after getting beat up, especially on for a young guy like Bybee. So I'm in on Bybee overall, and think that there is a really, really good pitcher in here that's able to limit, you know, the damage with the contact that he allows while striking out and not walking a lot of guys. Like, the strikeout rates in the minors were absolutely ridiculous. I you know, based on that, I could see the strikeout rate going up once he's able to mature a little bit as a pitcher there. Like, he had a 37% strikeout rate in 2022 at high A, 28% when he was promoted in double A last year, and then 31 in a brief spin this year. So there is more swing and miss in his game that I think is going to come. And it's still pretty good as is.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just kind of taking a gander here. I think one thing, cause it is strange that the slider for having 2,800 RPMs on that, like, that spin rate is great for the slider, but then you see the whiff rate is above average across all pitches, but it's probably below average for a slider. Mm-hmm. The one thing, and like you said, it's getting good results in terms of, like, the poor quality of contact. The XBA on it is a 183 average there. Part of me wonders, because, like, the plot chart on it looks very similar to the changeup, and they're both 84 miles per hour. So I wonder if that's something where it's kind of throwing hitters off by kind of pairing the slider and the changeup, because the changeup has elite whiff. So maybe it's just kind of a setup pitch there. But yeah, it looks really good. I think you'd like to see the ground ball rate a little bit higher, but overall, if he's not getting hammered, like, right now is pretty good at kind of inducing soft contact, and the K rate overall has been average. And when you look at other young pitchers that struggle, it's like, this is a really promising first start or first signs for him in his first 100 innings in the majors. So yeah, I like it for Bybee. I think this is one that you'll probably have to pay a little bit. You know, it's kind of like when you see guys like McClanahan comes to mind, where, like, that year after he was solid, he was going in the 100s, like early 100s. It seems like you'll have to invest in Bybee, but he's one that, you know, with like, in the spring, if I hear his velocity's going up, or that he's workshopped the slider, he's one that's doesn't take a lot of convincing to see him taking the next step, especially, like you said, with the strikeout upside he's had in the past. So
another guy with a lower chase rate than you might expect, kind of like Bradish. I think that maybe this is more anecdotal, and I don't have, like, the research behind it, but you would think that maybe these younger guys in the minors, they don't have to worry about guys chasing their stuff. Like, they just will, just because players aren't as good down there. In the majors, it's probably a lot harder to get guys to swing outside of the zone. And maybe that's something that just needs to come with a bit of experience and figuring out how to get guys to swing at the pitches that you want them to swing at outside the zone. So that could just be something, like, yeah, like the all the stuff is there, and the spin is there, the velocity is there with the slider, but the guys just aren't chasing the zone and swinging and misses as much as you like. Maybe that's just something that needs to come with a little bit of time, and an off season for a young talented pitcher like Bybee could be extremely helpful.
Yeah, it checks out. I mean, it's soft analysis, but it's like, if imagine coming up into the bigs, like, you want to focus a little bit more on control, right, versus command, and, like, making sure you're throwing strikes. But once you get comfortable, you can, you know, start, in, you know, baiting hitters into chasing a little bit more. It's like, you know, when your control is so good, you're just leaving a lot of pitches over the plate that people can hit. So there's, like, room to stray a little bit. Logan Gilbert came to mind too for that one, because it seems like he's one who's unlocked a little bit more from his slider, and he was so focused on, like, throwing strikes that I wonder if Bybee could kind of follow that path and unlock a little bit more Ks. So overall, a really good one. I think looking at like Bybee versus Ober, Steve, would you lean Bailey Ober there?
I think I would. I think the stuff is a little bit further ahead. It's close though, but yeah. I would lean Ober.
Yeah, both have the perks of that division. Both have, you know, good coaching behind them, but it does seem like Ober's kind of more mature in how long he's kind of been workshopping in the bigs, and it really looks like it's clicking for him. So I think I would lean Ober as well there. Wow, Steve, here we are in August, and we still have good things to say about Yusei Kikuchi. It seems like every year there's a little bit of excitement there, and then the velocity goes off a cliff, and so do the ratios. But Kikuchi on the season still has a 3.79 ERA. He does have a 1.28 whip, which is not great. The strikeouts, though, with 116 strikeouts over 109 in the third innings and an 8-3 record with the Blue Jays. The past month has looked great, too, with a 2.57 ERA, even though the whip hasn't looked as good. So with that old-school analysis of whip versus ERA, do we think this is yet another booby trap from Yusei Kikuchi, or do we think there's something a little different happening here?
I'm buying sort of what he is now. This is what I sort of hoped for when we were all in on Kikuchi a few off seasons ago. Like, good Ks, decent enough ratios, and, you know, good team contacts, like some wins. You know, the bar wasn't super, super high for me to be interested, and this is kind of what I hope for and what we're getting. Like, as long as the velocity is there and doesn't fall off a cliff, like, he's going to be good. Like, in 2021, when he was an all-star, like, that first half, like, he was throwing 95. Like, he's throwing 95 again with the fastball. I like it. Maybe there's a little bit of noise in there, and the fact that his barrel percentage is down below 10% for the first time in 2 years, and that's always been a problem. His the long ball, it's the 2.06 homer nine last year, down to just a 1.81, which still isn't great. This guy isn't going to be like a ratio saver or league winner or anything like that. But I still think it's like a slightly worse Jose Berrios with more Ks, like, which is fine.
The trade-off.
Yeah, it's a decent trade-off. And, you know, the walks, which were such an issue last year, are in check again at just 7.2%, the best since his first year in Seattle back in 2019, when there were some signs that he would be an interesting pitcher, despite a 5.46 ERA. And then the Ks came along. Everything else really didn't. But now it looks like he's finally pairing those two with a decent K rate, a decent walk rate. And it's resulting in some good ratios.
Yeah, it looks like he also has introduced a new curveball. I mean, he threw a curveball many years ago. But this year it's at 16.6% usage. The whiff rate is solid at 33%. And yeah, in terms of usage, like month over month, like 3% in April, 18% in May, and 27% in June. So just continuing to rely on that more and more. And yeah, for Kikuchi, a guy who, just 6 feet tall, like, you wouldn't expect him to have extension like he does, because he's got close to 7 feet of extension, which is terrific stuff that you typically see from guys who are like 6'3", 6'4". In terms of like longevity, age 32, I guess as long as the velocity sticks around, I think this could be kind of a sneaky back end of the rotation. Not quite the upside, but hey, if that curveball is there and if he can, try to keep the walks in check, it's mainly like that's been the bugaboo, right? It's why the whip is high. Last year he struggled at a 13% walk rate. He's flirted with double digits in the past. So this year it's just a 7.2% walk rate. So we'll see what it does the rest of the way. But I think he's a guy who is going to take a lot of it's gonna be a mountain to climb for managers to draft him early. So for in terms of discounts on draft day, I think Kikuchi will be kind of a bargain to round out a rotation or be like an SP5, SP6. So yeah, it's good stuff for Kikuchi there.
Yeah, I think Kikuchi would need to do a lot more than this to like right the wrongs of burning fantasy managers for so many years in the past. Completely ditched a cutter this year too, which was interesting. That's always been like a good pitch by like velocity and movement, but just didn't get the results. And hitters slugged .714 off of it last year. So,
oh my god,
good that he has put that away. And yeah, that might be another reason with the emergence of the curveball, the slider, and the fastball usage still being where they were, and then also having a changeup that he can go to against righties is good. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay, so one final name here to round out the rotations for your teams, Steve. We're talking Aaron Civale, mm-hmm. and maybe saving the best for last because how do we make sense of the Rays going out and dealing Kyle Manzardo, a prospect that I believe went in the first round in our like minors draft for the Fantrax league we're in with the pitcherless team. Manzardo was a very prized prospect. I know that he's struggling a little bit this year, but he's a great hitter, and for them to trade away Manzardo for Civale has to suggest that they see something here. And we talked about Eno's tweet earlier with Kyle Bradish. He was number 7th on that list of curveball stuff plus. Aaron Civale is number 1 on that list. So there is, you know, some, if you squint, some room for him to ramp up the swing and miss stuff. But on the season, just 58 strikeouts over 77 innings. It is not a good strikeout rate at all. The ratios, however, have been great with a 2.34 ERA, a 1.04 WHIP. I've been perplexed by Civale most of my fantasy career. Help me make sense of this one, Steve.
Yeah, there was, I think last year there was some interesting things about him. I remember picking up and being interested in him despite, you know, the results that weren't really there. It was kind of a lost year for him at a 4.92 ERA.
2 years ago, he was, I remember, because I rostered him in a lot of places, he was the first pitcher in the majors to get to 10 wins.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, it's not that he hasn't been good, right?
And I think he was a pretty big fade the year after that because, you know, the middling swing strike rate, you know, all the ERA indicators, much like basically a run higher than this 3.84 ERA. But, you know, the fact that the Rays are interested in him and they have this pitch, like he has this amazing curveball that, you know, there's a reason why the Rays went after him. CSW is pretty good, so he gets a good amount of called strikes despite just a 10.1 swing strike rate. Yeah, I don't know if this is going to amount to a 2.34 ERA the rest of the way, but hey, with the Rays, they're going to get the most out of him. And I know this isn't on the rundown, but it makes me worried about Kyle Manzardo. I know he's actually going through some personal stuff this year, I think, that he had to deal with. There was an injury, and I think he started to pick it up later. But also, right, Manzardo, I think, is projected to be a first baseman, which, you know, as a prospect, maybe it's not as shiny as it would be through our fantasy lens if he does reach it, just because the real life position value isn't great and you kind of want your first baseman to be a masher. And the Rays do so much platooning and have like Yandy Diaz and all these other guys that they play at first that maybe it's not the greatest fit. But hey, when the Rays get a pitcher, I'm interested in that. Another guy who doesn't walk a lot of guys, has an elite pitch. Maybe a Zach Eflin light upside there.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's also has one of the deepest and most versatile repertoires in the league. Like, kind of Yu Darvish-esque.
The Rays just they definitely see one of the pitches that they could tweak and get more out of. It might not just be the curveball.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, he throws six pitches, and I'm with you for what it's worth. I mean, I don't think anyone can. It's such a head scratcher that you just know they've got a trick up their sleeve here with Savali. And yeah, between Eflin, all the reclamation projects they've done in the past, it's hard to doubt him at this point. So yeah, I mean, grab your popcorn for the rest of the way, because this could be one. If he unlocks anything close to a strikeout per inning, I think he could be an absolute like wide awake sleeper for everyone next year. Because yeah, I mean, if you remove kind of the recent two or three years of, you know, that vanilla just innings eater type of thing for Savali, there was a time when we were all really excited about him for the Guardians. And yeah, at just 28 years old, there's still a lot of bullets left. So the Rays, I'm with you. I'm betting on them getting the absolute most out of Savali, even if it doesn't look like
he gets elite fastball spin, elite curveball spin. The velocity in the fastball isn't great, but hey, and it's always been a guy who doesn't walk guys. Like that is why the Rays have targeted him, and I'm sure they will get the most out of this profile. Not historically, but also not really allowing barrels this year. Did really well with that back in 2019. I know that's probably some more noise. Barrel allowed for a pitcher isn't the greatest stat to look at. But there's some interesting things in the profile that the smart people at the Rays are probably very, very interested in.
Cannot wait to see it happen. Yeah, it's a fun, that's the wild card one of all of the trade deadline moves. So very excited to see what happens there. And I never thought I would say that for Aaron Savali. So love to see it. Thank you guys again for tuning in. As always, you guys can follow us on Twitter, aka X, at WinsAbovePod. I am at @Van_verified, and Steve is at @Stav8818. That rounds us out for episode 111. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Here for the home stretch for you guys. Thanks for listening. Later.